You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 18 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we'll be chatting with Viv Govender after strong selling in our local markets, less so in the U.S., but still red. And TikTok, is this a bad president? Lorenzo Tincati on tourism and the economy under level one. Sam Beck-Bessinger on her new book, Manage Your Money Like a Grown-Up. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Woolworths, the earnings were down, but the share price was strongly up. And from Business Day, Reserve Bank signals that easing cycle is done. Morning markets, US was red overnight, S&P off 0.8, NASDAQ down 1.3, Asia's red, Sydney off 0.1, Tokyo literally a couple of points down. Commodities green, gold $1,959 an ounce, the rand 16.17 against the US dollar, and top 40 looking for a green opening about 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Viv Govender. He's a portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Viv, morning. Appreciate your time. Our local market, I mean, a strong down day yesterday. It was a futures closeout. There was a rate decision from our local Reserve Bank. No change. And in fact, they're saying that's it. No more cuts coming at all. If anything, next move will be up late next year. But, I mean, just a week ago, we were all excited. SA Inc. was running. And I get a sense of we eke our way higher and then we just sort of give it all back in a day. This is not looking like a strong bull market, certainly not locally.
Oh, yes, most certainly. I mean, it has been a strong bull market locally for quite some time. And look, our economy is in quite a bit of a situation at the moment, and we are not getting the kind of support, for instance, that places in, the U.S. markets are from their Federal Reserve and so on. So I do think that, you know, it's it just reinforces, Jules, the idea that investing locally is quite a difficult thing at the moment.
Yeah, it is. And as I said, you know, it was all great fun last week, and then the wheels have come off. I'm looking at the NASDAQ. I mean, we sort of, you know, the U.S. markets have sort of peaked back at the beginning of September. NASDAQ's been under some pressure. It's holding. But to your point, at least there, they've got that sense of stimulus. And then, frankly, they've got an economy. And we look at the job numbers that have been coming out, an economy that is recovering. It might be a long road, but it is sort of moving strongly in the right direction.
Yes, look, I mean, they have a stronger economy than ours. They have a stronger economy than Europe as well. Mm-hmm. So when I saw like reports earlier this year, like Goldman Sachs talking about the fact that, you know, Europe will be outperforming the U.S. for the next few years in terms of growth and so on, I thought that was ridiculous, you know. The U.S. economy is far stronger than any other developed economy in the world, and therefore, this just basically is another indication of that. Are they doing, you know, great? Not quite, frankly. We have seen the jobless claims numbers tick up after declining for quite some time. And, you know, even though they're kind of stabilizing on the million or so level, we are seeing, you know, numbers basically stabilizing at far, far higher levels than what you think were the historic norms, you know, in the hundreds of thousands. So there is still problems there. But the fact of the matter is that the Fed is basically, you know, super supportive of markets and, you know, hopefully of the economy. And they basically said that they don't really care how high markets go because they just want to support that economy. And at the moment, there is some disruption. There is some bad news with regards to fiscal policy because both Republicans and Democrats are trying to blame the other for no deal. But I think Trump is pretty keen to push through as much stimulus as he can. He's not really one of those Republicans who cares about deficits. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats just basically want to get more than Trump out there. So So it's just about who's trying to fight for the bigger deal at the moment. So basically we will see something happen there as well.
A race higher rather than a race to the bottom. Staying with the US, TikTok. So, I mean, lots happening. It seems that the preferred process is Oracle. Trump has promised to sort of give his yay or nay sometime today. Certainly his deadline is Sunday. I mean, is this, I mean, we certainly, I suppose if we, you know, we've seen China. I mean, like, you know, no Google in China, no Facebook, no Twitter, etc. You know, I look at what's happening here where essentially the president says, you know, TikTok myself, and I think this is a horror precedent in both senses of the word. But maybe it's just sort of how international trade happens these days. Or are we setting sort of bad ideas?
Well, I don't know if it is. I mean, look, the Chinese government is not a fair player in these markets. You know what I mean? And right now we are entering a point in which there's these massive imbalances in who basically controls the internet. So, for instance, we have seen Europe, for instance, do something similar against the US. I mean, the right to forget was against mm-hmm. Google. There was, of course, the 3% tax that was put through by the French, which is one of the reasons that Trump has retaliated with the trade sanctions against French goods, and that's obviously affecting the Tiffany deal there. But look, with regards to what the Chinese are doing, it's pretty obvious that the Chinese operated internet companies aren't operating in the same way that, for instance, a Google or Facebook is. There is not that separation between the Chinese companies and the Chinese government as there is, even though there is some relationship between like Google and Facebook and US government, that you are kind of like, you know, a bit more separated. And but right now with what's happening with regards to, you know, data collection and so on, I'm not an IT expert. I couldn't read through, you know, the code of TikTok, but I have seen evidence out there that TikTok collects a little bit more information than maybe they should be about your phone situation. And if that's the case, yeah, and you have 100 million users, for instance, of TikTok in the US, or something like ridiculous like that, you could have quite a bit of information being handed over to the Chinese government, you know, and so there has to be some kind of regulations around that. Whether or not forcing a company to sell out and this kind of stuff Trump said about basically taking a percentage commission for that from the US government, that is exactly the wrong way to go about things. But, you know, sometimes you got to take the good and the bad with Trump. Sometimes he gets some things right and sometimes he gets some things very stupidly wrong.
Yeah, apparently he has learned that he can't take a commission, and he's quite surprised. Apparently it is illegal. Yeah. Viv Govender, Portfolio Manager at Rand Swiss, appreciate your time this morning.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now with Simon Brown on The Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Lorenzo Tancati now. He's a YPO member, investor, and entrepreneur. Our president is moving us to level one on Monday. More than that, perhaps, or the bigger one, is borders are opening, which means tourism can sort of start coming back. International tourism. Lorenzo, morning. Appreciate your time this morning. I mean, it's fair to say that our economy in South Africa is now pretty much majority is open. The worst is undoubtedly behind us. We're not going back into that April, May hard lockdown, but the road back to normalcy in terms of sort of pre-pandemic GDP, it's going to be a very, very long and hard road.
Morning, Simon. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I think it's going to be a very long road. I think if I have to say, I am more worried about the economic aftermath of coronavirus. I think we'll remember coronavirus more probably for the economic aftermath than for the healthcare crisis, sadly.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean, if we move to tourism and focus particularly on that, I mean, certainly under level two, we've seen a boom locally in tourism. And you know, I've spoken to people in Australia, I've spoken to people in France. As it sort of opened up, pent-up demand, people were starting to rush out for it. But it's that pent-up demand. The bigger issue is, you know, once we've worked our way through that, consumers under pressure, unemployment at what is undoubtedly record levels locally, is actually going to make tourism, you know, is still very much a struggling sector going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you think about local tourism, I mean, there's no other option. But that local option exists everywhere. So if you think about how many people will decide globally, they just take the easier option and explore their own country. I mean, and unfortunately, we've seen the same phenomenon everywhere. We've just finished the European summer, and it's been obviously booming with local tourism, and some of them will continue to do so for a little while, especially until the situation stabilizes. And if you think that tourism in South Africa is a major contributor of foreign exchange, and roughly explains 3% of the GDP and employs 1 out of 20 people, so it's definitely relevant. And I'm glad that the opening has happened, will happen, and I think the world will. At the end of the day, what matters is confidence. So consumer confidence, investor confidence, and even tourist confidence. So what will matter is what can the tourist expect as an experience, in terms of safety, in terms of healthcare situation. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing how the average international tourist reacts to that.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you know, if I'm sitting somewhere in Europe and I'm looking for a holiday, you know, truthfully, I could pop in my car or get on a train or a short flight and, you know, go to one of the other European countries. If I'm going to take a long haul flight to the southern tip of South Africa, I need a lot of confidence on what's going to be on the other side in terms of safety. And I can't help thinking that a lot of people might just err on the side of caution. So our borders might be open, but a lot of those tourists who might have come to our country are going to actually stay in their own regional area just because of an abundance of caution.
Absolutely. And I mean, and even the smaller things, if you think about it, I mean, imagine the possibility of getting stuck somewhere across the ocean. Imagine even the possibility of getting stuck for a few days or for a few extra days, or getting or needing to be on a quarantine on arrival. I mean, it's definitely a lesser evil compared to contracting the virus or being affected by it. But, you know, this is the thinking that goes on in the consumer mind when making consumer decisions, and in this case, the tourist.
That's a great point. It's one thing to come to South Africa for a holiday, but what happens if we close the borders while you're here and suddenly you are stuck again? Lorenzo Tinkati is a YPO member, investor, and entrepreneur. Appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness, and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Sam Beck-Bessinger, she's just published her second book, also about money, but this one aimed at teens, Manage Your Money Like a Grown-Up. Sam, appreciate your time today. As I said, the book is aimed at teens, really trying to get them money smart. I mean, it was a long time since I was a teen. We cared about money, but we were never smart about it. We cared about it in so much as, did we have enough for the weekend or the next gadget? What you're trying to do here is say, hang on, there's a lot more to this. You need to be smart about this. And there's actually a lot about money.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm thinking of this as the mouth washed out with soap version.
Yeah. I didn't mention your first book.
I mean, I think pretty much the number one piece of feedback that I got from people who read my grown-up book was, oh, wow, this was great, but I really wish that I had read this when I was younger. Mm. So I'm taking them at their word, basically. I'm like, well, how young do you want to go? It was really fun kind of adapting these ideas for younger people, though, because You really have to make sure that you truly do understand the principles that you're describing. You know, there's that old thing that it's much easier to, it's much more difficult to describe something simply than to describe it in a verbose way. And this definitely proved that to me. Like, try and explain inflation to a 11-year-old where you can't give them the example of, hey, remember how Coke used to be so much more expensive? They don't know that. But it was also, what was interesting about it is it let me be much more philosophical about money, I think. You know, one of the things I did as research for this book is I asked 150 grade eights and nines from high schools to tell me what questions they had about money. And I was absolutely surprised by how profound those questions were and how many of them were about ethics and were about the economy and just fear about how unequal the world is that they are stepping into. So it was a real challenge to me to step up to that and try to write about the bigger picture and what money means to people emotionally in their lives.
That is what struck me about the book, because you know, as adults, we you know, assuming we're on top of our money, it's about budgeting, it's about saving, it's about FIRE and all of that. But what came through quite strongly in the book here was around simple things like you know, you talk about the ethics of money, the disparity between haves and have-nots. You talk around advertising, and I thought maybe that was, I liked the content, and I thought maybe it was humor. Moralizing to a degree, nothing wrong with that, but actually you're saying no, this is what the kids wanted to know.
Absolutely. You know, I think the thing with talking to younger people is that the opportunity space is so much bigger for their lives, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're talking to people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s about money, all of us have already accumulated a set of responsibilities. We've accumulated a set of mistakes that we're living with. We've accumulated a lot of things, and we've also accumulated ideas about what is and isn't possible for ourselves and our lives. And kids just haven't yet, you know. So it's quite fun talking to them. Like a lot of what I try to convey is the sense of money can be a tool for freedom, and it can be a tool for letting you be more purposeful about the kind of life that you want to live. And that applies to an 11 or a 12 or a 13-year-old that it just doesn't to those of us who are old and decrepit and have already made more mistakes.
Yeah, I like that point. It is. It's the clean slate. We can sit, you know, as a teen, you can sit back and make those decisions without all the baggage we already have. It's also, I imagine, going to make some interesting dinner talk. Now, obviously, a lot of parents who read your first book have bought this for their kids. But one of the things that really strikes me is who teaches the kids? Because it's not the parents, because with respect to the parents, no one taught them, not the teachers, because no, it's not even the governments. I mean, no one's taught anyone about money. Suddenly, they're going to be dinner table conversations that are actually going to be going upwards with the kids saying to the parent, hey, what about, and are you saving enough? And, you know, is that a good cause for good use of the money?
That just delights me, honestly. Here I am corrupting the youths. I hope that's true. And I hope that it enables more families to actually have conversations about money at all. Because that was definitely my, you know, my experience growing up is that I had a family that would very openly talk about any topic around the dinner table, from sex to politics. It was open and respectful. But the one thing that we never, ever, ever spoke about was money. It was the last taboo in our household. And it was something that my parents just found, you know, such an anxious thing to talk about. And, you know, undoing that thing for my brain is something that took me a long time in my 20s. It made me very money avoidant for a long time. And I hope that if, you know, there are some conversations at the dinner table, that helps kids to open up that space with their parents and can be, you know, useful for their parents as well, I think.
And engage. I mean, I've always advocated, and it's easy for me to sit on my high horse and say it. It's a difference entirely. But you know, money's a family thing, truthfully. It needs to be. Now, whether that family's with or without kids, it might just be a couple. But it needs to be that collective. And I take your point. It's not discussed. You know, I mean, politics and religion, maybe. Money, never. And yet it is so critically important.
And it's so bound up in every other part of family life, right? And I think the kinds of conversations that you can have with kids about money can be ones that really bring you closer together. Because, you know, one of the things that I really advocate in families, and again, you know, I can kind of do this from the position as cool aunt as opposed to actual mother. So again, very easy for me to say things. But, you know, I really love the idea of family savings goals. And this is something that I practice in my little family of me and my partner and my cat. Mm-hmm. but, you know, having these sort of shared projects that you are working towards financially, really just, you know, it becomes this fun, playful joint experience. And it kind of it becomes a part of everyday decisions, everyday budgeting choices, becomes something that you can talk about more openly, because you can say, you know, like, let's not go on this weekend away, because let's rather put it towards this really big, exciting thing that we're all excited about. So I think that it can be a really sort of joyful thing that brings people together.
That's a great point. I've seen it with my sister's family. It's discussions, and it's that, you know, which do we do? There's implications. Mm-hmm. You do one, you don't do the other. You need to make those choices, and rather as a family. Sam Beck-Bessinger, the book is Manage Your Money Like a Grown-Up. Buy it for every teen that you know, and then expect some fun/awkward dinner table conversations. Sam, really appreciate your time. That's it for today. For the week, you'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the app. Podcast available from 7 a.m. The show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.